Welcome to the Patriot League's Pillar Citizen Spotlight. My name is Aaron Robertson and I'm the president of the Patriot League, where we work to advance four pillars of moral truth that we believe sustain America's ability to survive and thrive: traditional marriage, parental rights, religious liberty, and the humanity of the unborn. Since 2009, we've been working to build a coalition of the Pillar Citizen community, those citizens who care about the Pillar principles for families and unborn children. And so we're so happy today to have Pastor Darius Holland with us as our guest to chat about these principles, and just looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you, man. Pastor Holland serves as the pastor at True Life Church in Thornton, Colorado, and he believes very strongly in the Pillar principles. And so we've invited him to the spotlight today just to hear his perspective and get his thoughts as a religious leader on the principles. His remarks are not intended to be an official statement of True Life Church or its affiliates, but reflect his sincerely held personal and religious beliefs. And I will introduce this little one to you all shortly. But first, Pastor Holland, we'd like to start off with, what is your primary motivation for believing in and defending these pillar principles?
I think the main thing is that we have an opportunity to inform our community. I think most of the times when we are looking at what we believe and how we believe, we tend not to think about how that actually plays out in the things that we do every day. And so my biggest heart was being able to inform others as to what it is that God has to say about this, and then in turn, how does that inform your actions? And so this is a big area for us to just kind of sit down and talk about and determine whether or not there's a way in which I can inform that. That's all.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So prior to serving as a pastor, you played 10 seasons in the National Football League, that little NFL deal
Yep.
that we got going. A team that won the Super Bowl, you had played on that, on the championship. So can you give our viewers a brief summary of the events that led to you going, because it's quite a jump, from being a football player to a pastor?
Oh, man.
Short story, right?
Short story, right? I can summarize it with a story. 1996, we're playing for the Super Bowl, and we're going in to play New England. And that was probably one of those moments in life that you can't quantify with words, just because the atmosphere is electric. The people are excited, and it's all week long, you know, so it just gets built on day upon day. You come in, you fly in, everybody from the president to, you know, your janitor from high school is watching, you know, everything that you're doing, and they're sending you a note and saying, hey man, good luck, and things like that. I think that was one of those moments in my life that I thought, okay, now I've made it. Right after the game, we just won the game. It's the biggest moment. We've won the Super Bowl. I'm getting congratulated from everyone. And I went into my room, sat down. My family was there. I took a moment to myself and started to cry. And the reason why I started crying is because I thought to myself, if this is the greatest moment of my life, I'm in trouble.
Wow.
I'm in trouble because nothing seemed to satisfy the hopes, the dreams, the expectations that were built up through that week. And if that didn't satisfy that ache in my heart, then I knew this was not the answer. And so it took some bumps and some bruising, some brokenness for me to finally come to the determination that I needed to submit to something. And that's how I did. And I'm the all-in kind of person. And so when I made that determination to serve Christ, shortly thereafter, I decided, you know what, I'm going to go all in. And literally, it went from just serving to then now they were saying, hey, why don't you be a pastor? And I'm thinking to myself, that's a bad idea. But it happened, and that's pretty much how I got here.
Wow. And I'm sure folks could check you out in other venues or other resources where you should probably share more of your story.
Sure.
But that's the short version. Thank you for that. In 1776, Pastor Hahn, the American founders wrote in the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, End quote. So with this in mind, sir, what are you observing in society that's feeding the mindset that disregards the dignity of human life? And here we have a beautiful baby here that's demonstrating this for us, the preciousness of young life. But what do you see that's undermining this dignity of life?
I would go to even that declaration, and you would see that there were 56 men of means, financial means, that wrote their names on that document. 56 wealthy white men who wrote their name on that document. Now you gotta understand, when they put their name on that document, it meant that they were gonna be traitors to the crown. Mm-hmm. And the subsequent result would be they could be murdered, they could be killed, they could be, you know, ostracized, yeah. They could lose all their wealth, they could lose, and many of them did. Many of them, yes, on that document, we know nothing about other than that they lost everything.
That's right.
Okay, so here's where I then start to realize, I think the mindset of those individuals were, I will give everything for the cause of freedom. Now we have people who are giving away everything and letting their freedoms be stolen. And so here we have a mindset where instead of being enslaved in the sense of taxes, color, or anything else, we're now being enslaved in our minds and our hearts and our belief system.
That's right.
And so what happens now is that we're people that don't even know that we have the right to think and believe different than what the popular voice might say.
That's very good. That's very good. Is there anything that you're seeing as a part of that that's assaulting the dignity of life, even as it relates to
absolutely. I mean, you think of, I mean, it's literally a very simple parlay from a mindset to then realizing that if I don't care about my freedoms, if I don't care about my life, people are now saying, what's the point?
What's the point of life?
Right.
That's what you're saying.
And so now you're seeing people who are young kids, some who are not even old enough to really understand what life really looks like,
right,
making decisions to say, well, my life's not worth it, I'm gonna end it. And I'm talking about 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds that have not really gone through a whole lot and now are making some significant choices,
right,
to end their life. And so I make that statement to say that the mindset of having giving up these liberties are the same mindsets in which now tells us what's the point. And the point of living is that we have an expression that's valuable and unique, that benefits all of us, and yet we're not willing to even live that out because we've lost the mindset of living for something.
Well, that's right. Yeah, for sure. So you probably noticed, all our viewers and folks here in the studio, a special visitor with us today, a beautiful newborn baby girl, and this is Annalise. And it's always a privilege to hold a newborn baby. And I thank her parents for allowing her to visit us with us briefly. And she's a reminder of the importance of the humanity of the unborn. And you see, Annalise, she's about to wake up here. Annalise was the unborn just 4 weeks ago. If I can get four fingers here. 4 weeks ago. It's okay, girl. It's okay, girl. And unbelievably, because she lives in one of the 8 states that have no gestational limits on abortion, a baby like her could have had her life taken before birth, roughly 4 weeks ago. I hope that Annalise's presence moves us deep inside and highlights the travesty of legalized child killing. And I'm sure if Annalise could talk right now, she'd remind us that a child is a child no matter what side of the womb that they happen to be on. And this child also reminds us of the importance of all the pillar principles, and that traditional marriage is the God-given and best-suited context for her to be raised in, that her parents have the God-given parental rights to direct her upbringing, and that they should retain the God-given liberty to care for and raise her according to their faith and beliefs. Annalise belongs to her parents, not the government, and so with that, I'm going to hand her back to her parents, and again, thank you so much. So, let me set this here. I guess the best part of the program is over now.
Yeah, right?
I'm so sorry. It's okay.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. So beautiful. Okay, got it. Okay. All right. Okay. And we'll just keep on keeping on if that's okay.
Yep.
Okay, great. So, Pastor Holland, we've worked with you since 2014 as part of our Pillar Project. It's a non-ecumenical coalition of religious leaders calling on their governing officials to defend the Pillar Principles. And as a member of the evangelical community, why, in your view, should the evangelical community not only believe in the principles, but also actually advocate for them as well?
I think the two parts in that question that are important is the belief and advocacy.
Okay.
Belief basically says, this is what I believe to be true or hold to be true. The advocacy is what we value. It's what we take action on. And I think in our case, when we're looking at our belief systems, mores, values within our own community, we have to consider whether or not we are truly living out what we believe. Quick illustration. You go to the stoplight, you see that the stoplight says red. We stop because we believe that's a good thing and the stoplight is a good thing.
Yeah.
But once no one's around, it's late at night, the stoplight no longer has any reason to stop us other than to think, well, you know what, it's there, but nobody's here, I'm going to keep on going. Well, that tells us we value something else, and we value our time. And so therefore, what we tend to do is we say we believe this is a right and good thing, but then our values don't add up to it. And so the advocacy part is you're saying, hey, this is important enough in my life to say something about it in a public forum to which other people can then say, I'm taking in the full counsel of those who are speaking as to whether or not this is right and good in our community.
And even take the risk of getting criticized, right?
Absolutely.
As you know, just by opening your mouth, or anyone in your scenario, you open yourself up to criticism.
Absolutely. But I go back to the document in which we first started out on. Here we have 56 men who chose to give up everything so that we have the founding of this nation.
Yes.
Well, shouldn't we have the same kind of courage in our people today to say, you know what, yes, I may not be liked by everyone, but I do need to make a statement that says this is not right.
Mm. Yes, thank you for that, for sure. So, Pastor Holland, I'm sure that you believe your role as an evangelical Christian pastor is a spiritual calling. You already kind of made that clear. But do you believe the same can hold true for an evangelical athlete, or what about evangelicals who feel called to hold elected or public office for the purpose of defending and advancing the Pillar Principles?
You know, I think the short answer is, do I believe in it? Absolutely. I think the calling that we have on our life is not meant to be something, I think we use that word calling like, well, I put in for this job, and so therefore I was selected, and therefore I was called. Calling means I've been given a mandate from my God to do something. And so therefore, I do believe that you can be in several different roles and actually honor God in each and every one of them. And so when it comes to elected official, I believe you have even a greater responsibility to do just that.
Mm, okay. So yes, an athlete could
absolutely
do that role. It's not just the pastor or people in those
absolutely
same scenarios. Yeah. Okay. What do you see in your work as a religious leader in that field, if you want to call it that, or that segment of society, that motivates you to publicly advocate for the Pillar Principles? There's got to be things that you and people like you are seeing that you're saying, this is concerning to me. What are those things?
I've been hitting on it through my answers. I think the big part is, I think at this point in our society, locally and nationally, I think we have come to a point where truth no longer matters. You have a person who says, this is true. They can prove it with evidence. And someone will say, I don't care. That's not how I feel
there
about it.
Right.
And so therefore, it doesn't matter. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, that there's something wrong when a person or a document that has the authority to speak on a subject intelligently says something and we just negate it because of feeling and objectify it and say, well, that doesn't necessarily hold weight in this conversation.
Right.
And so therefore, for me, I think what happens is that at some point in everyone's life, you need to be able to say, you know what, when I was called upon to do something about this injustice, I was willing to say something. And so I think that's part of not what only motivates me, but I believe it's my calling. I went from a place where someone would say, hey man, you know, that is the pinnacle of life. Play football, sure. Make a lot of money, you know, and do everything that you want to do. And I'm looking at them and saying, no, you really don't want that. You really don't want to be able to be free of the law, free and to live above it. You really don't want that. Because what happens is that you realize there is no joy in that lack, that lacking of limitations. Knowing your left and right limits makes you feel that you are going to be safe. And not only that, it allows you to enjoy the fullness of living in between that left and right. And so when you start to live above it or below it, you start having a quality of life that's less than what should be the normal human life.
Exactly. Well, and along the same lines what you were saying, and you've probably heard this as well, it's like driving an automobile on the road, and people say, well, you know, I want freedom, and I'm a liberty person, right? Mm-hmm. Well, to your point, if we got rid of all the white lines, the yellow lines, and all the signs, none of us could get anywhere.
Yeah.
So those constraints, to what you're saying, are so essential for productivity of culture, even on a basic level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. It's my understanding, Pastor Holland, that a person's gender is viewed by most within the evangelical community as a gift and a design of one's creator. And so if this is the case, how should your community interact with individuals who struggle to recognize their gender as such, or who may be dealing with other similar issues?
If I could rephrase your question,
sure.
And I would say, how do you live with people that don't think, act, and believe like you do?
Got it.
I would say that if you can't do that, you could not live in society. I mean, go to high school, go to middle school, go play on a sports team. Matter of fact, just go to the coffee shop. I guarantee you, you're not going to be around somebody that believes the way you do, thinks the way you do, acts the way you do. I think that's part of the reason why we have the laws that we have. Now, some of those laws are codified. Some of those are things that we just know not to do. And so I think it is as simple as knowing that we all have to get on the elevator if we're going to go to the floor that we're supposed to go to. And sometimes you just got to get on. Now, granted, I may not think you smell very good. I may not think you dress very well. I may not think all those, but we still got to live together and we still got to do things together.
Right.
And so I think we're making it into something that I believe it never should have been, at least in the ecumenical community.
Okay.
I think we are to be able to live in the community, but not be of it. And that is some of the error I think we've made it to be now, that the community has to look like us, and that's not what it says.
Okay, right. So if those individuals, and if I'm hearing you correctly, you're sort of saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that we don't necessarily treat that different than any other difference. We just recognize the difference, live according to our convictions, but it's not like it's a separate thing. Is that fair to say, characterize what you were saying? Or?
Absolutely. I do think that there's a conviction that each of us have. To say you're not prejudiced is to be foolish. I mean, I'm prejudiced against meat. I like it. I want it on my plate when I'm eating, right? Well, in the same way, does it mean that if somebody else doesn't, that somehow or another I don't like them? Mm-hmm. That's not true, right? I'm oversimplifying it, and I get it.
Sure.
I said, but I'm saying that I can live to my set of beliefs, and we can be at the same table, and you live according to yours, and not have a problem.
Yeah.
Now, it's when you make a statement that I don't agree with, I should be given the same right to speak my thoughts on that matter as you do. And it seems like to me today, if I make a statement that is not in agreement with what you have to say, all of a sudden, now we have a problem.
Right.
It's hate speech. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You've said something that I don't agree with.
It's a conversation.
That's what it is.
It's a conversation.
Right? Now, if we raise our voices and things like that, I get it. Intimidation comes from a lot of different realms. I get it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if I am making a statement from a position that I believe is true,
right,
you should give me the respect to be able to say it.
Very good. It's got to go both ways.
Absolutely.
Right? If we're ever going to see more, if you want to call it, healing between some of these communities, there's going to have to be humility in there.
Absolutely.
And two-way, yeah. And so if these individuals wish to attend your religious services to hear the teaching, assuming they're not there to just be disruptive, are they welcome to do so?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
I took that from your answer.
Oh, yeah. You know, the funny thing is that the church, or at least in my opinion, our local church at True Life, I believe, is a place where somebody could walk in and ask the question, maybe what is right and good according to the Word of God, and be able to get an answer. Now, if you don't agree with it, you can leave and then choose to move on to the next place where you can find where you want to live. But every place should be one that's welcoming. But affirming, I think not.
They're different things.
Different things.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Pastor, if we could, let's talk about a bill that was passed by our elected state legislators, and they are elected state legislators. We, the voters, put them in. And it became law this year, Pastor, in the state of Colorado. And the law makes it legal for an adult, in this case it's a psychotherapist, to have private conversations with a parent's child. I know you're a parent, so am I, so we can imagine this, as young as 12 years old, without the parent's permission, or the parent even knowing that the conversation took place. So what are your thoughts on this?
I tend to, when I think about questions like this, I tend to look at other laws and ask the question, does this make any sense? For example, at the age of 15, you have to have a permit, and there's limitations on those permits in order for you to drive a car. Yeah. At the age of 17, that is when you can consent to sex. At the age of 18, you can actually then put in to smoke marijuana. At the age of 21, you can now actually, you know, drink alcohol. At the age of 25 is when you can finally actually rent a car. Now, I'm not trying to be the smartest person in the world. I'm not even trying to get into a whole lot of, you know, theological ramifications here. But you're trying to tell me that if you can have those things happen in a person's life at 15, 17, 18, 21, and 25, and you put limits on those things so that the person who signs for them is the one who's responsible for them, but then you take a 12-year-old and say they don't have to do that, that makes no sense.
Great analogy. And I think it's really hard to argue with that. I mean, just, it's enough said, I guess, right? Unless you had something more you wanted to add. I think that hit it. Okay, concerning the pillar of religious liberty, Pastor Holland, there was a bill proposed last legislature that would prohibit some members of the religious community from providing certain counseling services. Specifically, if an individual under 18 years of age, so here we go again with the age piece, if they're under 18, they're struggling with unwanted same-gender attraction, and of course the parents are approving of this counseling. If that individual came to you, the bill would have prohibited you from providing your counsel if your counsel involved words or actions that supported their desire to reduce the same gender attraction. And so it would have banned this regardless of whether your counsel just involved the conveyance of the traditional evangelical teaching as it relates to same gender attraction. So once again, would you please give us your thoughts on that proposal?
Let me make sure I understand the question.
Please.
You're saying that if a person under the age of 17,
under 18,
is wanting to have a conversation about their sexuality, and you don't agree with what they're thinking about, you cannot have a conversation with them.
Yes,
basically,
sir. I would say that's a fair representation of what
okay.
this bill is.
So again, I appreciate things like this, and I just take it in the context of law. So if I go into a school I cannot proselytize. I can't go in and actually start talking about, I'm a Christian and I want everybody to be saved according to my beliefs. Mm-hmm. But if someone asks me my opinion about what I believe, I have every right to make that statement. And here's where I think that comes from. When we go to the First Amendment, I have the right to speak how I believe.
Right.
I have the right to assemble how I believe and to make others known, specifically the government, what I agree with and what I don't agree with.
Yes.
That's on a public platform. If the conversation is made private, where an individual who's asking a question comes to me because they believe I possess an understanding about what is right and good in the world, shouldn't they be able to ask me my opinion? Now, I can't enforce what they do with what I say.
That's right.
I'm not making them do anything.
So it's a conversation.
It's a conversation that allows me to speak what I believe.
Yeah.
And for you to say that a person who is as educated as myself or others like me who have taken the time and invested themselves in trying to understand what is the higher ethic and morality of a community.
Yes.
And you're saying they can't talk to them. I would look at you and say, I think you're more afraid of truth than you are of what I might even say.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gets back to what we were saying earlier. It really is. It's just a conversation.
Yes.
And we're trying to ban, or I should say these individuals are trying to ban certain types of conversations.
Absolutely.
That's not free speech. It's a violation of America's founding principles, if anything was.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to the level of free speech because I think if we don't think about laws in context of where they could go, we inevitably could find ourselves where we're not able to speak, not privately
exactly.
or publicly, about the things that we believe in.
Exactly. And so we have to make sure we speak about us, the Pillar Citizen community, in whatever way we can, or we will lose that freedom.
Amen.
Yeah. So it seems that those who are working to undermine the Pillar principles have most of the momentum in the culture right now. I think we could all see that, to put it mildly. Sir, how do we change that? Or should we just accept it?
Well, I don't believe we should accept it. But I think what's really, I'm gonna affirm it in one way. I think what's really neat is that 6% of our nation's population has been able to redefine what we consider marriage. 6%, less than when it initially started, it was like 3%. It's grown to be 6%. Now, think about this statement. If I believe in something so strongly that I go to my friends and say, hey, I just want you to know that this is something that we should do together, and I can get them to believe or agree with what I'm saying, that I have a place in this world to speak up and I can be heard in this government is an awesome thing. That's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we have allowed, and I say we, and I will even minimize it just to the Christian community, we have allowed for our voice to become negligible at best in the conversation because we're afraid of being labeled a hate speaker or we're saying things that maybe just don't sit right with you. And I look at you and I go, I would compel you to not be that way.
That's right.
Because of the fact that if you believe upon the name of Jesus, that you should be a type of person that's willing to sacrifice it all for the sake of what you believe.
Well, I think you hit it on the nail on the head when you talked about we're afraid. I really believe that's the root of why we don't. I don't know what other motivation really there is in general when someone doesn't speak up about something they see that's wrong. It's fear. And so if we, back to what you were saying before, if we don't speak up, we're going to lose even the freedom to speak up, you know, on that. So it's very concerning.
Mm.
Yeah. So we know that citizens who care deeply about the Pillar principles, they often hold very divergent theological perspectives, or they have no theological basis at all. In your view, should these Pillar citizens work together to advance our shared Pillar principles? And if so, on what basis? In other words, how can they do that without compromising what's most important to them, their beliefs and their faith? So a lot of people struggle with this, I think.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. And the reason why there's so much is because theologically, there's so many issues that we're talking about. But I'm going to put that aside for a second and just say this. If there is something that is true, and I say that I'm going to say specifically to our Christian community just for a second. Yes. If something is true, do you believe it comes from the Lord? Do you believe that all truth truly comes from your God? If that's the case, there are times when there are people in your life that don't believe like you do, that you should partner with in order to accomplish a task that God has called you to do. Now, there's areas where I think we struggle with that because of the fact that are we agreeing and affirming something else because we're working together with this brother or sister or this friend or this. And I would look at you and say, you know, I have people in my own house and in my own church that they do things that I don't do. And just because we're family doesn't always mean that we do things the same way. Right. And I'm a parent. I'm speaking as a parent right now. Man, we have parents who have kids who have done things, and we're like, what were you doing in your home? And you're like, nothing, I promise you. And so I turn to Luke 15. I think it's a perfect, you know, stepping point. Dad does nothing wrong. His son chooses to be wasteful with everything that's given him, lives a life that is not according to what his dad taught him, and yet he still loved him, he still cared for him, and he still wanted to be his father. And so I think in this particular case, I personally believe that when we are looking at something that is wrong and you have people who will partner with you to help accomplish a task that truly is the right thing, you are going to have to set aside the fact that that person may not believe like you do, but have an equal desire to see that which is wrong be changed.
That's right. And that applies to the pillar of principles, does it not?
Absolutely, 100%.
Because we're not talking about unity of faith.
Right.
And it's sort of like you're saying, it's sort of guilty by association. You mentioned earlier in our time that you, sounds like, enjoy meat.
Yeah.
At one level or another. So I'm not a vegetarian, but let's just say I was. Well, people could look at this video and assume, well, they're sitting in the same studio, looking at each other.
Right.
They must both love meat.
Right.
You can't jump to conclusions
Absolutely.
Like that. So just because we might be on a particular purpose, pillar principles, standing with evangelicals, Catholics, Greek Eastern Orthodox, Muslims, Jewish, I mean, just up the line, it doesn't mean we're saying we have unity on anything else other than these particulars.
And I think that's when you're making statements of agreement, you spell that out, right?
Yes.
You make contracts with a car dealer, and we've all seen how that has gone bad, and we've seen that maybe that person wasn't truthful and upright kind of citizen that would tell you the full truth, but yet you made a contract with them, right? You made a contract with them because in order for you to get around to do your job, in order for you to do your life, you've had to make some concessions with your money, with whatever. And I would just say that I think sometimes we fail to realize that we do it all the time, but because of guilt by association, because of we're just wanting not to be perceived a certain way, we've become a person or a people who've chosen to say, you know what, I don't want to be perceived in that way, so I will acquiesce to whatever's popular, and therefore now something that could have been as innocuous as me just hanging out with somebody has become something completely different.
Exactly. And I would just encourage the Pillar Citizen community to, we can't be afraid of working with people that we disagree with on other important areas. We just can't do that. Frankly, there may have been a day long ago where we may have not have been as essential for us to work together for these principles. But the time has come in, if you want to call it secularized America, that if we don't work together, we're not going to be successful. We have to. And let's be realistic about the law as well. Our state representatives, senators and whatnot, and federal officials, they have an obligation to represent their entire constituency. So if I'm a member, let's just say, of the Jewish community, I'm a follower of Judaism, they could take my considerations or my priorities into account, but they can't do that to the exclusion of yours. I mean, if they're doing their job, they're representing everybody. So I just want to encourage people, because that's really a big part of what we're doing, Pastor, is the belief that we can come together in solidarity on these foundational moral principles.
I think you even have an historical precedence for it. I mean, if you look at the Greco-Roman history, we see that in Roman history, the Jews had the permission to be outside of the Roman belief system. They had that religio licita to be free to believe and still be a citizen of that community. And yet at times they were called to work together for different reasons. And in our history, we know there was times when they were called upon by the governing authority to help, and then vice versa to accomplish a task that was needed to be done. Now, granted, we know the most famous that ended up in an issue of Christ being killed, but ultimately there were times when they had to work together in order to accomplish things. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah. Excellent point with the history of that. I never thought of the connection there. But yeah, I mean, they would conquer a people, and the Roman Empire, I think as a general rule, would leave those people sort of intact. As long as they paid that tribute,
that's right.
You know, then everyone's happy to a point. So excellent point on that. So as we wrap up, what would be your final thoughts for us as it relates to the pillar principles?
Man, final thought. I've been...
Wrap it all up.
Yeah. I think, without being too preachy, I would say this. I think we should not allow for fear to dictate what we are to do. And I'll say it in the sense of, if you have a faith, the faith is the other side of the coin. And so fear tends to tell you what not to do. Faith tells you what God has called you to do. And when you operate out of fear, what you believe literally becomes innate. It becomes the very trap in which was set just for you to keep you silent. And I think in our case, we have to be a type of people that are willing to say, this is what we believe, and we're willing to act on it in such a way that you now, as a fellow citizen, have to ask the question, is this true? And so I would say, you know, you can't operate according to fear. You have to operate according to faith if you're going to be a person that's going to benefit our community as a whole.
Yes. Pastor Holland, thank you so much for sharing your perspective on these matters and giving us a whole lot to think about.
Amen.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. I'm Aaron Robertson with the Patriot League, and I'm inviting you to join the Pillar Citizen community at pillarcitizen.com. You can also help by subscribing to our YouTube channel, joining us on Facebook and inviting your friends, or making a financial contribution. So on behalf of our entire leadership team, we want to thank you for watching The Spotlight.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.